Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Today on Inside Politics, a tremendous lapse in judgment. That's how a judge summed up the behavior of District Attorney Fani Willis while ruling she can stay on Trump's election racketeering case in Georgia, but under one condition. We're live at the Fulton County Courthouse with all the breaking details. Plus, running out the clock, it's Team Trump's legal and political strategy with multiple court dates now on hold. It is possible voters could decide the former president's fate before any of his cases reach a jury. And the White House has a message for Republicans trying to impeach President Biden. Move on. Shockingly, the House may listen. We'll bring you that new CNN reporting this hour. I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. We start in Georgia, where a judge just ruled that DA Fani Willis can continue spearheading the election case there against Donald Trump if she removes her top deputy in the case, Nathan Wade, with whom she has had a romantic relationship. That is part of a win for the district attorney, but the rest of the ruling leaves a major stain. The judge went on to admonish Willis for the relationship, writing, quote, Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices, even repeatedly. CNN's Nick Valencia is outside the courthouse. Nick.
Dana, a technical win for Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis, but a massive indictment on her behavior. The judge saying that there was no through line proven here that Fani Willis was able to enrich herself by hiring Nathan Wade as the lead prosecutor, but he was highly critical of that relationship, saying that Georgia law does not permit an actual conflict for bad choices, even repeated ones. And this is what he is saying in part of his ruling just a moment ago, saying, quote, sorry, just give me one second here. I was getting a phone call, Dana, as this happened. Give me one second to get this full screen. The finding by no means is an indication that the court condones this tremendous lapse in judgment or the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during the evidentiary hearing. So during that course of the evidentiary hearing, during her testimony, Fani Willis called Ashley Merchant a liar. She was the defense attorney that first brought forward these allegations. And the judge, though, saying in his ruling that she came with her own credibility issues on the stand. We should expect Steve Sadow, the former president's attorney here in this case, to launch an appeal. And there are also some big questions that still remain here. One, principally, when will we see Nathan Wade file his resignation letter? When will that happen? And also, will the Fulton County District Attorney's Office be able to get this case back on track for a trial date before the November election? Dana?
All such good questions. And Nick, if that's somebody calling with a hot scoop, get back on the air and tell us what it is, okay?
Thanks, Dana. You got it.
Thanks. And we still have not heard from Fani Willis's office, as you just heard from Nick. But Donald Trump's lead attorney, Steve Sadow, said this. He said, while respecting the court's decision, we believe the court did not afford appropriate significance to the prosecutorial misconduct of Willis and Wade. He went on to say that he would continue to fight to end this case, which should never have been brought in the first place. Our excellent legal panelists are here to give their expertise and also more reporting. CNN's Paula Reed, CNN's Laura Coates, and former DeKalb County District Attorney J. Tom Morgan. I'm going to start with you there down in Georgia, J. Tom Morgan. Just the big picture. You know Fani Willis. You certainly have worked alongside her, if not directly with her. What's your reaction to this ruling?
Dan, it is a slap to the head to the prosecutor, but not a fatal knockdown punch. Mm-hmm. She can stay in the case. The judge said what we've been saying all along. There's not an actual conflict. There is no finding that there's a financial interest or personal interest in the conviction of the defendants. However, he did find, as you know, an appearance of a conflict, which gave him a continuum of remedies. And he decided the remedy here is that she can either dismiss herself from the case or dismiss Mr. Wade from the case, which she should have done from the very beginning, to be honest.
Okay, here in the room, Paula, what are you hearing from your sources there who are involved in this about how this case will go forward and the trouble with which it will go forward, or maybe not?
Well, look, there's no expectation right now among the folks I've talked to in and around this case that this will go before the election. Fannie Willis had originally said she wanted to start this case, which is expected to last 4 to 6 months, by August. But this process to disqualify her has taken up quite a bit of time. Now Nathan Wade is expected to have to be removed from the case. So it's highly unlikely that this will start before the election. And also, look, I think we talk about delay, delay, delay. That's the Trump strategy. Yes, they try to do that, but they're getting a lot of help. Not only, for example, from the Supreme Court that took up the issue of immunity when they could have done that months ago, pushed one of the federal cases back, but also here, I mean, you have the conduct here. Even though there was a finding of corruption, the fact that they had to go through this to analyze this pattern of bad behavior, this really did help the Trump team, not only in terms of delaying it, but also in undermining the credibility of the overall justice system and the prosecutions against Trump. Yeah, so that's how they feel. They're like, look, Fannie Willis can stay on the case, but we feel like for our other goals here, this is working for us.
And pick up on that last point, Laura. And as you do, I just want to read for our viewers a little bit more of what Judge Scott McAfee said. He said, quote, yet reasonable questions about whether the district attorney and her hand-selected lead SADA, meaning Nathan Wade, testified untruthfully about the timing of their relationship further underpinned the finding of an appearance of impropriety. How does that kind of slap, as we just heard, or that kind of admonishment affect prosecuting a case like this?
No prosecutor wants to enter a courtroom and have everyone think about their own personal life or question their own credibility, because you're going to be putting forth evidence through witnesses, of course. Any statement by an attorney in the courtroom is not evidence, but what they put through a witness would be. But still, a jury would know and look at them and perhaps think, should I believe what they say? Should I give the benefit of the doubt? Should I extend that face value argument to this person or not? There's no guarantee that she would actually be the one to try this case any more than Jack Smith would stand before a jury and say, Jack Smith on behalf of the people of the United States of America. But it is something that is taken into consideration. The judge addressed this, though, Dana. He did not find an actual conflict that rose to the level of prejudicing the defendant or could undermine their chance at a fair trial. And he went on to say, listen, there is enough time before a jury trial could be impaneled to dispense with a permanent taint on this jury. And so he's aware that there is amnesia that can set in. She's an elected official, as is he. They have chosen her to be their Fulton County DA. And remember, this hearing did nothing to talk about the underlying facts in this case. And consider the balancing test here. Mm-hmm. Yes, the salacious details, the credibility assessments made by this judge, problematic, not what any prosecutor wants. But she's going to be asking a jury to weigh not herself, mm-hmm. not her relationships, but the conduct of over a dozen defendants. Will a jury find that more problematic or less than her own?
And I want to bring a J-Town back in 1 second, but just to follow up, there's also the practical.
Yeah.
If assuming that he goes, her lead prosecutor, how much does that hobble her ability to actually get the case together?
Yeah, it's hard. You have to replace that person and backfill and get people up to speed on the grand jury testimony. A lot of what prosecutors are relying on is the perfect memory of what the tone, the context of a witness's testimony was. I remember I want to bring that in because here's how it sung to my grand jury. Here's how they leaned in. Here's how they were in some way provoked to anger and a visceral reaction. Reading a transcript, being brought up to speed to the tune of more than 2 years worth of investigation is very hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine. J-Tom, I want our viewers to listen to a bit of what Fannie Willis said on the stand that might have gotten the judge so angry. Let's listen.
You've been intrusive into people's personal lives. You're confused. You think I'm on trial. These people are on trial for trying to steal an election in 2020. I'm not on trial, no matter how hard you try to put me on trial.
Now, just to be clear, she was talking to one of the defense attorneys who was bringing up this motion against her, not the judge, but the judge didn't like that and other ways that Fannie Willis behaved, as she was very clearly annoyed and trying to defend herself. J-Tom.
I'm sorry, Dana, was that a question?
Yes, that's a question. What when you look at that and you see what the judge did and said about moments like that, What's your takeaway?
Yeah, well, I want to allude to what Laura just mentioned a few minutes ago. My experience in trying high-profile cases is that jurors have a memory of a gnat. By the time this case goes to trial, they're not even going to know what you and I are talking about today. And if you add into that, the defense, I am sure, will file immediately for an immediate certificate of review, which is completely in the discretion of Judge McAfee. But if he grants it, this case could go on for years.
So, I mean, I take what you're saying, but even in a high-profile case like this, I mean, I'm guessing most of the cases that you tried in Georgia were not national, international headlines. Not to say that they weren't important, but they didn't have to do with the former president and potential future president of the United States.
Yes, I did try one that had state and national headlines. Mm-hmm. And again, by the time we tried it, there was a lot of forgetfulness.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Paula, you mentioned this, and we talked about this yesterday, but because it's another day and things change, want to look again at the overall timeline for just this, but the other three trials that are pending for Donald Trump. And the timeline, the classified documents case, the earliest we would see the trial is in August, waiting for a judge to rule on that. Federal election case, the date is dependent on what the Supreme Court does, first of all, about immunity. The Georgia election case we're talking about now, date uncertain. And then overnight, there was a bit of a change in the New York hush money case. The trial is scheduled still for March 25th, but both sides are asking for a delay.
Yeah, a lot can change in 24 hours. Yesterday, I believe I said this is the only case that is expected to go before the election, the New York hush money case, the district attorney framing it as the 2016 election interference case. But late last night, the district attorney revealed that they are not opposed to a 30-day delay in this case. Now, the need for the delay is because there's now tens of thousands of pages of evidence that they have to review. And this came from the Southern District of New York, federal prosecutors. This is a state case. And right now, Dana, there are a lot of questions about why there are suddenly tens of thousands of pages of discovery that they need to look at 2 weeks before this trial was scheduled to start. Now, both sides have their version. The Trump's lawyers, they argue that this evidence was withheld by the Manhattan District Attorney. The other side argues, in fact, that the Trump team waited to subpoena this evidence. But this was really startling because this was the only case that was firmly on the calendar. We'll see how long the judge delays this. The defense attorneys are asking for 90 days. He could split the middle, but look, if he delays this for 60 or 90 days, Dana, that increasingly complicated calendar gets even more crowded and more complicated. At this point, I cannot say for certain that former President Trump will face any criminal case before the election. Yeah. It's likely, but it's not certain.
How much of a screw up was this in New York?
Well, the fault does not rest, it seems, with Alvin Bragg, the DA in Manhattan. Why? Because these documents were not in his possession. Every prosecutor has to turn over documents through the discovery process because it could include exculpatory material. You may hear people say things like Brady evidence, which means things that could prove that you're actually innocent. I got to turn that over because otherwise the weight of the government against you is entirely unfair and there is no due process. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be contained in these documents. It could be harmful documents to Trump as well. But if you're the defense, you're going to be standing up there pounding the table that you have had things withheld from you, whether you like it or not. The SDNY, I believe, is the one who was asked for the material over a year ago by Alvin Bragg's office. They did not provide it. Now they're doing so. That doesn't matter to the average American listening. All they hear is the government did not hand over documents in a case where the person who is the defendant already says is weaponized government. But at the end of the day, it's better to have happened now as opposed to in the rearview mirror when they would have had a stronger case of some sort of misconduct.
And apparently I'm being told that just now the Trump team sent a letter to the judge saying 30 days is not enough.
Yeah.
So delay.
Shocking.
Delay. I know. It's really surprising. Everybody, thank you. What a great conversation. Jay, Tom, thank you. Paula, you're going to stick around.
Thanks,
Laura. Much more on Trump's legal travails coming up, including the big question that's hovering over the campaign. What happens if, as Paula just reported, none of these trials happen before Election Day?
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Former President Trump's legal calendar is not happening in a vacuum. It is happening in the middle of a razor-thin presidential campaign. With me to talk about that, CNN's Jeff Zeleny, Laura Coates, and Gloria Borger. Hi.
Hi again.
Jeff, I want you to talk about something that I heard you talking about this morning. I'll give a little, you know, peek behind the curtain to us sort of internally, which I thought was such interesting reporting about the way that the Biden campaign is viewing everything that's happening with Trump on the legal front.
Look, I mean, not that long ago, there was kind of an assumption that the former president either might have some type of a judgment by the time voting judgment day comes in November. That is very much an open question now. I would say the betting odds are that there may be no conclusion to any of these cases. But as far as thinking inside the Biden sort of broader world is, they are not planning on a conviction. They are not sort of focusing on that. A, it's out of their control, and they have enough challenges to worry about on their own, trying to get people to sort of embrace Joe Biden as opposed to rejecting Donald Trump. But they are no longer thinking that any of these cases in Georgia or here might be resolved. The Georgia case, though, is so interesting because I was talking to an advisor who really was kind of talking this out, not sure how it plays, because it's a local story. Mm-hmm. And Georgia is a battleground state. We saw last Saturday Joe Biden and Donald Trump were campaigning hours apart, miles apart. We don't know how this plays. This gets so much local coverage in Georgia. It could sort of rally support for Donald Trump or not. But that is one wild card here that was sort of not on anyone's bingo card 4 years ago. When Georgia became a surprisingly Democratic win for Biden, they weren't necessarily expecting that either. But it's not a must win for Biden, but boy, they sure would like it.
Yeah,
and
so
it's equal. It's easy for you to... it's harder for him to get to 270 without Georgia.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. The reason why this is a story, because Trump really needed Georgia,
right,
is potentially playing...
It's a hall of mirrors.
It's a hall of mirrors.
Right. It also, it just sort of undermines the whole legal system. And, you know, Donald, that's what Donald Trump has been trying to do. Mm-hmm. And his whole spiel is the legal system is rigged. It's rigged against me. And look at what happened in Georgia with Fannie Willis. And so you can't trust the legal system because she's still going to be prosecuting my case, and she shouldn't be. She doesn't deserve to be there. So in the state of Georgia, as you point out, even though it's a big local story, she's an elected official, the judge is elected, it's going to have some legs in the state.
I mean, 2 points, really. On the one hand, Georgia is unique because these were Republicans who fought back against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Brad Raffensperger,
right.
Brian Kemp.
Right.
This was the state where...
But Laura, they're rhinos.
That's right, they're rhinos. I keep forgetting. Yeah. Once they've gone against, they can no longer be a part of the party.
That was sarcasm.
So, you know, it was clear sarcasm.
Get that, okay.
But that was what makes it unique about Georgia. And also on Tuesday, I mean, even Nikki Haley is no longer in the race. She was holding her own against Donald Trump in Fulton County, in DeKalb County, in the Georgia suburbs as well. So it's maybe a little bit telling. But finally, remember, Donald Trump's goal is delay, but his real goal was it's all to go away. Mm-hmm. That has not happened in Mar-a-Lago. The judge did not dismiss the case, even although he wanted to talk about the issues of an ambiguous, he says, Espionage Act. He wants the Fannie Willis case to go away. If she had been disqualified, there was no chance this case is going to go to trial this year, let alone maybe even at all. And so delay is one thing, but he doesn't want to kick the can down the road. He wants the road to be obliterated.
Well, he doesn't want to just delay. He wants to destroy.
Yes.
And destroy means destroy people's faith in institutions. And one of those, of course, is the judicial system.
Well, that's all true. But the other major factor here, he definitely wants to. What did you say? Don't kick the can down the road.
Yep.
Burn the road or something.
He wants to destroy the road.
Destroy the road.
Obliterate
yeah,
the road.
That was good.
Yeah.
It was such a good quote that I screwed it out 5 seconds later.
There you go.
We'll
have a whole Mad Libs
later.
Moment.
but Jeff, a big part of, if you kind of go back in time, in him announcing at the time that he did in 2022, and the way that he has approached his political campaign and his legal campaign simultaneously is all about him personally. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't want to be president, but a big part of why he wanted to be president and wanted to declare his candidacy early on was to blur the lines
right.
and to make it harder for him personally to be successfully prosecuted because, oh, I'm not just a former president, I am a candidate for president in the future.
Without a doubt. I mean, this is someone who has, you know, complete name ID. He could have jumped in at the last moment, the night before the Iowa caucuses, and he yeah. could have still won. But the reality is he jumped in first. He wanted to be a candidate for president so he could say that this was all part of the witch hunt, all part of election fraud, trying to block him from this. Such a good point, Laura, that you made, that Republicans in Georgia stood up to him. It's a little unclear. Some of those same Republicans will put their jerseys on and vote for Donald Trump in November, but some may not. I mean, so this is why it's such an interesting laboratory in Georgia. This case, if it goes to trial, will be on television mm-hmm. every day. It's the only one that will. That is different in this as well. And it's also one, should he become president, that he cannot do anything about because it's a state case. So this is the first ruling, really a string of some pretty positive rulings for the former president from all courts. This is the first one that was not in his favor, and it's a big deal.
He's been pretty lucky, though, so far.
Very lucky.
Gloria, I want you to weigh in on this, but you talk to voters all the time. You're out on the road constantly. How much are they tuned in to all things Trump legal?
It's a blur. All these cases run together and blur together. The Georgia is an exception. I haven't been down to Georgia for a few weeks to talk to voters there. I think that could be different because it's happening there. Mm-hmm. But I was in Michigan and Wisconsin most recently, and voters are, it just all runs together. What are the cases? What are not? If you don't like Trump, obviously, you're supportive of this. If you do, you think it's, he's being ganged up on.
And then you have, as you come in, I want you to listen to Jamie Raskin. He was talking to Manu earlier this week. He, on the one hand, said, look, like when some of the charges were dropped in Georgia, like that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And he's making the argument that if you're going to respect the judicial system, then you have to go in all in on that. Let's listen.
Or a walking crime wave like Donald Trump, you can trample every criminal, civil, disciplinary, ethical boundary you want, and then you know that it's going to take time for the justice system to catch up with you. But that's in the nature of justice system based on due process. But we've got to stick by the rule of law. It's all we've got.
Well, right. You do have to stick by the rule of law, and sometimes it's on your side and sometimes it isn't. And I think in these four cases, we might not hear any of them before the election. It has worked in Donald Trump's favor mm-hmm. because he wants to delay and destroy and, you know, do whatever. And now, you know, in D.C., you're waiting for a Supreme Court ruling, and there's nothing you can do to skip over that. You have to wait. And our polls and other people's polls show that the American public does want to get a resolution mm-hmm. on at least one of these cases before they vote.
Yeah.
They want to know if he's going to be convicted of any of these things. And they now, it looks like they may not know.
By the way, being a Teflon Don is not the best asset. You're talking about cases in multiple juries because you could have the cumulative effect of jurors being aggravated that this person keeps getting away with it, and they may take a risk and say to themselves, "Well, not on my watch."
What an interesting
point. His defense
point.
Has to guard against that.
Yeah, as somebody who has prosecuted cases, mm-hmm. maybe you've had that experience. Everybody, stand by. The White House is telling House Speaker Mike Johnson to move on and to end his party's impeachment inquiry against President Biden. Believe it or not, they might do just that. And later, Vice President Harris is meeting at the White House today with rapper Fat Joe on the agenda. What we're calling here on Inside Politics, a Green New Deal. And by green, we mean weed. It's been 6 months since House Republicans opened their impeachment inquiry into President Biden, and they've got very little to show for it. There are no more closed-door witness interviews scheduled, and there's no clear consensus on how or even when to end the probe. As Republicans try to chart a path forward, the White House says it's time to shut this down. In a letter this week to House Speaker Mike Johnson, White House counsel Ed Siskel wrote, quote, "It is obviously time to move on, Mr. Speaker. This impeachment is over. There is too much important work to be done for the American people to continue wasting time on this charade." CNN's Annie Grayer has been reporting the story for us and has some great new details. You can see her story, it's on CNN.com on the screen, and luckily she is here with us. Annie.
Yes, Dana, this is not how Republicans thought their 15-month investigation would be going. When they got the majority back in January, investigating the president and his family was a huge focus. But after 15 months pouring through over 100,000 bank records, interviewing around 40 people, including the president's son, Hunter, and brother, James, their business associates, Department of Justice officials, IRS whistleblowers, Republicans haven't found any evidence of wrongdoing by the president, and they don't have the votes to impeach. So the question is, how do you land this plane? House Oversight Chair James Comer wants to do criminal referrals to the Department of Justice, but the other stakeholders in this decision-making process, namely Speaker Mike Johnson and Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan, say more conversations need to be had about that. Comer also wants to bring Hunter back in for a public hearing, but some Republicans say Hunter came in for his deposition last month. He sat for 6+ hours, answered every question that Republicans had, and were surprised at how prepared he was and don't really know what more they can get from him in a public hearing. And just looking, taking a big step back here about how much this has an impact and plays into the 2024 presidential election. Some Republicans say, look, we tried, we investigated, we did as much as we could. Let's wrap this up and focus on delivering for Republican voters in November. Then you have other Republican lawmakers and sources who I talked to who say, let's drag this out as long as possible. There's no incentive to end this, and let's try and hurt the President Joe Biden politically and help Donald Trump as much as possible. So that's where we are 6 months in, and not where Republicans expected to be.
It's such great reporting. And just to keep with your plane illusion, whether they're going to land the plane, something tells me they're going to just kind of quietly stay in a holding pattern and pretend like the plane's not up in the sky. Thank you so much, Annie. Appreciate it. And President Biden isn't spending that much time focused on impeachment. Instead, he is spending the past week, at least, on the campaign trail, hitting Pennsylvania, Georgia, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Next week, he's going out west, stops in Nevada and Arizona. Jeff is back with me. Zolan Cano-Youngs of The New York Times is here, too, and Gloria is also still here. Jeff, I want to turn to some great reporting that you have that's on CNN.com right now to bring it sort of alive for us here at the table about the fact that the president aims to prove he can still stump the old way as the last campaign kicks into high gear. What are you learning?
I was struck just watching him stand in a campaign office in Milwaukee, such a departure from 4 years ago when he was essentially cloistered in his basement in Delaware. There really weren't campaign offices. So it was just a stark reminder because of COVID. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was just happening 4 years ago, like this week. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, they had to shut down their headquarters in Philadelphia. So it just was a reminder to me that, yes, this is a rematch, but it's an entirely different race in every shape and form. Mm-hmm. And the stumping the old way, he was standing on a porch yesterday in Saginaw, talking to voters. So one thing that we saw really throughout the week that my colleague Kevin Liptak and I observed was that, yes, he's meeting people, small groups of people by design, obviously, but this is all designed to do one thing, to reassure Democrats that he's got this and that he is back in the game and that his campaign infrastructure is ready to go. There's been a lot of criticism that, you know, is the campaign operating fast enough? That's what all this is about, is to reassure Democrats. They have a lot of work to do down the road on independence and perhaps winning some others over. But this first leg was to sort of get Democrats back on board.
So, it's such great reporting. I want just to kind of help bolster that. I want our viewers to listen to part of a focus group specifically with Wisconsin swing voters on how they feel when they watch Joe Biden?
When I see President Biden, I feel calm and trust.
Concerned.
Embarrassed.
Exhausted.
I'd say I'd feel hopeful about his policies.
This is from our friend Richard Thoe, and I want you to just listen to one other bit of this focus group, and this is something as a mom, that parents sort of should strike everybody. It's with somebody who has a young child trying to watch the State of the Union.
Who watched all or some of President Biden's State of the Union address last week? Show of fingers.
It was on the whole thing, but I also had a 7-year-old that kept coming and interrupting me. So I didn't really catch all the parts of it, but it was on.
I mean, it says it all.
It does. It does. And, you know, the comments there could almost be kind of divided into almost like two categories in a way when it comes to the criticism against and the concerns about President Biden and the campaign. One being sort of the performance. Is he up to this? That you could factor in the concerns around his age and that as well. And then the second one I heard also there a voter mention his policies and how you're feeling about his policies. And with this trip coming up, I think you can watch both of those things. Is he able to not only have the sort of performance that we saw at the State of the Union, but also develop a sort of consistent and a consistent way to describe all of these different bills that have passed and his policies in a way that's digestible to voters now that we're in basically the general?
He has to show some vitality.
And that is what he showed during the State of the Union. And I think that's the purpose of putting him with smaller groups, which he's very good with. He's good at town halls, for example, and he can be really energetic. And I think that's important. And since this is going to be a choice election, it also provides a contrast to what Donald Trump is doing, which is being in a courtroom a lot of the time. But he's doing these huge rallies.
Yep.
He's not doing Q&As with people who come to see him. So it's a completely different strategy.
Lori, I just want to show our viewers something that really speaks to what you're talking about Joe Biden in smaller settings. Mm-hmm. This is the president with a young boy named Harry, talking to him about Harry's stutter.
I have a stutter, just like you did.
I did too, but don't let anybody tell you that you can't do anything, because people would make fun of it, like this president making fun. But remember, look at me. You're smart. You're handsome. You know what you're doing.
I mean, wow. Obviously, he was referring to, for anybody he didn't see, he was referring to Donald Trump, who, in a speech recently, made fun of Joe Biden's stutter.
And this happened during the last campaign as well, where he connected with a young person with a stutter. And by the way, he doesn't just do this on camera. He does this a lot, and he still struggles with it, as we all know from watching him, particularly as the day gets later and later. And it's something he has to work with. Every speech he gives, he's got to kind of map it out. And now a lot of people don't know he had it.
And it's something he didn't really talk much about at all until the campaign last time. And I'm thinking back to that boy. I think he was from New Hampshire.
Yes.
He saw him during the primary and they developed this connection, and then they ended up playing that video during the convention. But it brought chills to me, this young boy talking to the president. I grew up with a stutter as well, and this is something that is very challenging. And I think the president talking about that's interesting. But that was another part of the relief of the State of the Union among some of the supporters. I was at a watch party in Detroit, and they were all Biden fans. And a woman expressed to me, she was so relieved that he did well, the performance aspect of it. But that is a very telling video that the Biden campaign obviously put out.
Yeah, no question. I want you to jump in on all things Biden, but you're going to want to talk about the next segment because it's high interest. There's a high interest gathering at the White House, a famous rapper, and the Vice President of the United States in a joint meeting on legalizing marijuana. Mic drop.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
That ganja green, that Cali weed, that is an actual line from Fat Joe's song, Make It Rain. And today, it's why the Grammy-nominated rap artist is at the White House. In the next hour, Vice President Harris will discuss marijuana reform in the West Wing with Fat Joe, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, and people who received pardons for prior marijuana convictions. My panel is back, and I did not mean to suggest that you were a stoner when I said it would be of high interest to you. I know you've done a lot of reporting on this.
Yes.
This is strictly professional.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, look, this is an important criminal justice issue. One, it's interesting that the vice president is leading this roundtable just for her role as well. Let's remember the policy and her approach to marijuana and sort of reform over drug reform, that gave her a lot of grief during the last presidential campaign. So it's interesting to see the arc here of her now leading this roundtable. I have reported on the administration sort of approach to drug reform. President Biden, even during the campaign, really put an emphasis on nonviolent drug crimes. They have issued pardons when it comes to this. But remember, mostly for federal crimes, which they only have leeway over, that only impacts a sliver of those who have actually committed prior offenses for this. So it'll be interesting to see if this is mostly an issue that is meant to galvanize a younger base of voters and it's mostly politics, or if we actually see a policy
change.
Well,
the president said in this State of the Union they were going to look at it, and also says publicly that nobody should be arrested for possession, period. So he's sort of come out.
Let's actually listen to that, if you don't mind. Okay. This is the president talking to a young man holding a sign saying, legalize pot.
By the way, I'm taking care of that. No one's going to be jailed. No one should be jailed for just using and possessing marijuana and staying on the record. Yes, sir.
And this is Jeff is reminding us that was at his own campaign headquarters in Milwaukee.
Right. I think he's made up his mind on this. And I think one of the reasons that Kamala Harris is leading the way on anything that has to do with drugs is because I think the Bidens are very sensitive about that, given Hunter's problems. And
sure.
So maybe that gets shifted onto her plate.
Which is, again, interesting, again, just because this was sensitive for her, too, in the last presidential campaign. I did reporting where I talked to people that worked with her when she was an AG, when she was a DA. This was one of the points of criticism that a lot of people in the
progressives were furious.
In fairness, it was a very different time. And we have the receipts, as they say, to show it. Look at the polling. First of all, let's just look at the support now. Among 18 to 34-year-olds, I mean, it's off the charts, 79%, 35 to 54, not that far behind, 71. 55 plus is 64%. That's more than 6 in 10 Americans, almost two-thirds. And just let's look to your point about the way Kamala Harris viewed this. It's not just her. 2023, last year, support for marijuana legalization, 70%. 2003, it was only 34%, 99, 23%, and then 1969, 12%.
A dramatic change. And we've seen a lot of state-level changes on this as well. There have been referendums in red states and blue states where it has passed. So this certainly is something the public sentiment is behind. The Biden campaign is hoping that this is one of the things that sort of fires up younger voters in the absence of some enthusiasm, challenges, frankly, because of foreign policy and other matters. But as Olin was saying, this is a serious issue, a serious drug reform issue and sentencing issue as well. And there is a big federal review underway that we were just talking about that. And you think that there's not a chance that this is done before November?
We'll see. I mean, just the timing of it is hard to predict, but you basically have HHS reviewing the classification of marijuana right now. It's on the same level as heroin right now, which the president has come out and criticized. But again, you need the DEA involvement there too. There's tension there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're making jokes about this, but you make such an important point. This is very serious when it comes to the justice system and the inequities there. Thank you guys so much. Ahead, could Senator Joe Manchin change his mind and run for re-election in the U.S. Senate? We've got some new exclusive reporting on that next. Senator Joe Manchin is flirting with attempts to keep him in the Senate as an independent. My colleague Manu Raju reports that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer tried to talk the outgoing West Virginia senator into considering a last-ditch Senate run. Manchin threw cold water on the idea, but in true political fashion, he hedged, calling it, quote, a long, long, long shot scenario, and added, nothing is 100% in Washington. That's it for Inside Politics today. Join me, though, on Sunday for State of the Union. Among my guests, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Republican Senator Mike Rounds, and the only grandson of President John F. Kennedy, Jack Schlossberg. I hope to see you this Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern right here on CNN. Coming up next, CNN News Central. Have a great day.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.